Hey, good morning, everybody. Today is a great day. My name is Stu Turlian, President and CEO of the Sandstone Group, and I've got a climatologist, and one of the hits that I really enjoyed getting to visit about, and now we get to talk with Dr. Judith Curry, and she has a new book coming out. So thank you very much, Dr. Curry, for stopping by.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, we were just chit-chatting right before the show, and you were up in Reno, is that right?
Yes, I am. Just on the tail end of all these big atmospheric river events that have been blasting California. So we're not getting it nearly as bad as the Californians, but we're still getting enough to make life interesting here.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you've got a nice, for our podcast listeners, I'm over here in Dallas, Texas, all nice and calm and everything. And Dr. Curry, you're up there and you've got a heavy coat and you're inside. So what's up with that?
Oh, okay. Well, furnace went out. And we need a replacement furnace. So I want to go with a heat pump inverter situation.
Right.
And there's some electrical problems that preclude that. The electrical problems can't be dealt with until all the fallen tree branches have been cleared away. We've been getting the what we call Sierra cement snowfall. It's extremely wet snowfall. Wow. And we have all these big juniper pine trees, you know, with the leaves, and they just get weighted down and boom. You know, it's just horrible, all the big tree branches we have down. So as soon as, and the tree guys can't get in until right. The snow has melted. So,
you know, you don't have any natural gas or propane, huh?
Well, we do. We have another. In another part of the house, we do have a gas furnace and we have gas fireplace, you know, so we're managing, but I'm a little bit extra bundled up at the moment.
Well, Dr. Curry, you are a climatologist and you've had a very great career throughout everything. And you have a book coming up, Climate Uncertainty and Risk, Rethinking Our Response, Anthem Environment and Sustainability Initiative. And it is coming out, I believe, on...
I think it's July at this point. You know, it's slow. Yesterday, I got the peer reviews back. This is an academic press. I wanted it to really go out for a very thorough peer review.
Right.
And they did that. And it took a very long time. And the response is very favorable. But the comments say, oh, I have to rewrite this part. You know, So it's motivated me to, you know, I haven't even looked at it for a couple of months, which is a healthy thing. And then when you come back to it, you've got sort of a fresh look at it. And right. Some of their responses did trigger some ideas for making. It's the first part. You know, once you get into the meat of the book, you know, it just... Right. But getting it, there's a chicken and egg problem. What do I talk about first? And, you know, and that was the hardest part. And that's the part that I want to rewrite. But I'm not going to take too much time rewriting because I want to really keep this rolling so that it does come out in the summer. So I'm pretty excited about it. Yep. It's going to be a pretty unique book.
Well, your other textbooks, I love it that you're a climatologist with textbooks. When I was in college a bazillion years ago, I mean, we actually had heavy textbooks and we actually had to go to school and learn things. I was looking at your textbooks and they're pretty good. You got some material out there.
Oh, yeah. A book that I wrote in the 90s, Thermodynamics of Atmospheres and Oceans. I mean, that was pretty widely used as a textbook. And I think it still is. They wanted me to do a second edition, but, you know, I just moved on. And then there's another book that we wrote that's really for graduate students, Microphysics and Kinetics of Clouds. I can't remember the exact title, but right. It was something like that. And that was with a Russian collaborator. He was actually the first author. And it was fascinating because it really merged the Russian scientific thought on this subject with Western thought. And they had really evolved in different directions.
Right.
Russians, like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even into the 90s, really didn't have much in the way of computers to do their research on. Okay. And so they were good mathematicians and they could, you know, just do it on pencil and paper and, you know, compared to over in the West, we're just doing these big computer modeling things. So it was a very different perspective, and it was an insightful thing that if you make this approximation, then you really had to think about what was actually going on rather than just, look at computer output, from a model. So it was a very interesting experience, and I learned quite a bit from that. So, those were the old days when climate scientists had, a deep education that was physics and chemistry based. Right. These days, it's more what I would call climate studies rather than, it's not physics and chemistry based. It's about climate.
Right.
It's not, into climate and of climate. So there's a lot of people out there these days calling themselves climate scientists who have a very shallow understanding of the fundamentals. And, it's one of an old crusty professor emeritus like me, in the good old days, we knew a lot more and we had a much better education, but I'm sorry, it is sort of true. I mean, there's some university programs that are maintaining the strong tradition and hardcore geophysical sciences and physical chemistry and stuff like that, that are the foundation of our field. But there's also a lot of fluff programs. And, you can get a master's degree by, reading the IPCC reports and watching a lot of YouTube videos and writing some essays, and boom, you've got a master's degree in climate studies or something. So, at this point, we've long left our scientific moorings, and we're off in politics land.
So, as you're being thrown around out there as being a climatologist, and now that you're debunking it, and you're all of a sudden they were not happy with you. I mean, it was kind of like, what are you thinking? And
it's more complicated than that.
Okay, tell me.
Hardcore scientists don't criticize my arguments or whatever.
Okay,
great. I got thrown into the denier camp when I started criticizing the hockey stick and got Michael Mann upset.
Okay.
Okay. And that was, you can't. And also when I started saying the IPCC needs to be more transparent, they need conflict of interest guidelines, whatever. When I started criticizing the IPCC, okay, those were my sins. It was criticizing the climate establishment, and more importantly, being critical of Michael Mann. That was the end. Then I became a denier. So, but I mean, people who understand the science, would never call me a denier.
No, but you sit back and kind of go, when it seems like when people pigpile on you, it's for the wrong reason almost anymore. If you even make one comment, they'll just jump on you because you had
I've ceased caring about what, the silly stuff on social media. I've long ceased caring about that. I'm interested in having conversations with serious people, and I dig deep into problems.
You do.
when I have a client or do a report or something catches my interest, I dig deep. I don't try to do something superficial. What is everybody else saying about it? No, I might look at that after the fact, but that's certainly not where I start.
No, Dr. Curry, I really liked your website, judithcurry.com, I believe is what it is. You've got some nice articles out there, and I was looking at one of them. Now, the article, the post that was just put out, Academics in the Grid, Part 1 and Part 2, Russell
Schussler.
Schussler, yeah. Thank you. I'm from Texas. I would have butchered it, so thank you very much. Okay, the articles are like five pages. But there's like 7,000 pages of comments and interaction on that. And that's fabulous that you're getting that much interaction on your website.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the old days, I used to get more, but that was before I moderated it. I didn't want anybody to accuse me of censoring any viewpoints or whatever. And so it was really pretty rough terrain. But then I started moderating it, but more for decorum and civility, not for... I don't moderate out stupidity or your, political perspective or whatever. I don't moderate as long as people are civil,
right?
They can play. So I don't have as much traffic as I used to, but I've got a pretty interesting group of commenters for the most part. Russell Schussler, some interesting backstory there. when I first, I don't know, maybe almost even 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, he just sent me an email.
Right.
You know, I'd like you to consider this post as a guest post. And he called himself planning engineer. And I thought, oh, well, wow, this is really good. And I posted it. I didn't know who he was. You know, he wanted to keep totally anonymous. And at some point, he outed himself to me. He didn't want to be outed more broadly, but he was the vice president of planning at the Georgia Transmission Corporation.
Oh.
Okay. And I was at Georgia Tech at the time, and, you know, they were practically neighbors. And so, you know, I actually went out to visit the Georgia Transmission Corporation and met with engineers, VPs, and all sorts of different people. And they gave me quite an education on, you know, what the issues were in operating the grid. You know, it was an education for me, but having Russell Schuessler contribute to my blog, you know, was quite an asset. So he retired maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
And we were friends on Facebook. He was out having a ball, you know, all these wild skateboarding and acting in community theater and, you know, high adventures. He was, you know, he just went crazy with adventures, was great. And then after a couple of years of that, then I started getting some posts again. He started writing again. And now he's fired up. He's got so many ideas. And he met a collaborator through my blog. This is Roger Kaiser. He's the skeptical environmentalist of New York. I don't know if you've come across him, but he's another really interesting person in energy space.
Right.
And he has a blog and whatever, and he's very knowledgeable of what's going on in New York. So it's one of the fun things about the blog is that I've developed this network of interesting people, not to mention ones with a lot of expertise in a broad range of areas.
Right.
So, you know, really good resources for me to draw on.
Well, the article that I thought it was really, really cool from Russell's perspective on the grid. And when you're putting in there, Meredith, I got to interview Meredith from Shortening the Grid on well, too. I imagine you know her from her book as well. I thoroughly enjoyed learning about the renewables versus putting them on the grid. And there is a gigantic difference going on in there that people are just saying you can't throw them on there. And I mean, that's what he was talking about in his little articles here. Where do you want to go from here besides your book? You're going to have to sit down and between now and the summer, take a look at that.
Okay. No, not really. Okay. So I have a company, Climate Forecast Applications Network. CFAN.
It is right over here.
Yeah. CFAN. So we founded the company in 2006, and our idea was to try to apply weather and climate research and knowledge to helping people manage weather and climate related risk.
Right.
And our first, we started off with a wide range of projects. Our first project was actually flood forecasting in Bangladesh. It was really a humanitarian project trying to, you know, they get engorged with floods and, you know, they get totally wiped out. And so with some advance warning, you know, even 5 days, you know, they can walk with their cows up to someplace higher, take their seat with them, and then they avoid the catastrophic losses that they would have otherwise incurred, not to mention loss of life. So, and that was funded by, you know, like World Bank, USAID, those kind of things. And we did a technology transfer, and a group in South Asia is now running our model and giving those warnings. Right. And then our second client, okay, this was, it was an oil company, a petroleum company. And this was in 2006, 2007, following Hurricane Katrina, Rita, remember all those horrendous, and they institute, you know, natural gas prices just went through the roof.
Right.
And natural gas trading had started during that period. And so what they said, well, what we want is somebody who can forecast hurricanes that might impact the Gulf, you know, with 2-day lead time before the National Hurricane Center.
Right.
And they thought maybe, you know, I said, oh, sure, we can do that. And the idea we initially had was is not very good, but we did develop, a completely unique way for making, you know, longer range forecasts for them. And then they loved it. right away in 2007 was the first year that we're making forecast. There was one going into the Gulf. This was Hurricane Dean, and it was predicted to go straight to Houston. Well, you're Houston, Texas. You might even remember this, 2007. And we said, it's going to Mexico. You know, I think you're okay. So everybody, you know, so they knew, you know, so they could sell high. Right. And, you know, they apparently made good money on that. And then the next year in 2008, Hurricane Ike, you might remember that one. That was a big one for Houston. Okay. And so we saw this coming, say, okay, this time you are going to get hit.
Right.
But we saw it before everybody else. And so they were able to, you know, book up all the hotel rooms inland so they could do their business continuity thing, even though Houston was getting hit.
Wow.
and so, you know, that's how we got started with the company. Since then, I don't have, you know, many like petroleum companies, but a number of electric utilities. Yes. In the Southeast U.S., we're vulnerable to hurricanes. We also do temperature forecasts. We've been doing a lot with the insurance sector, mostly related to hurricanes. We've still kept our humanitarian stuff going. We're working, have an agricultural project in Pakistan and India.
Nice.
Just helping the smallholder farmers, giving them better information so they know how much they should plant, you know, whether it's going to be a good season, when to plant, when to fertilize, when to irrigate, you know, so they don't waste resources and help with the timing of the harvest. So we're starting our second year on that project. So that's pretty exciting too. So my dance card is pretty full in terms of keeping myself busy.
Oh, absolutely. Peter is your chief scientist and founder of CFAN, correct?
Yeah, Peter Webster, yeah.
Okay, I got a question for you because I worked with some folks a bazillion years ago. You know, Moses and I are friends. Down at Louisiana, they had the Supermic supercomputer, and they were managing the tidal flows in and out and everything else on a supercomputer. How is your shop? Do you have your stuff on a software? How is your model working on all this? Because all the oil, you know, having that much data that you just described, saving lives, saving equipment, and saving consumers because of pulling everybody out of the oil fields, how does your system work?
Okay, we use the global model. Weather model forecast, ensemble forecast. The best one is the so-called European model, ECMWF. We purchase those forecasts. It's about $250,000 a year, so it's not cheap to buy those forecasts. But the skill that we bring is what I would call, I guess, calibration. We correct for bias and distributional errors. So we improve the global model forecast. And then also something that's called ensemble interpretation. They're ensemble forecast models. So each forecast time, they might run 50 different simulations of the forecast with slightly different initial conditions. And this helps us account for the uncertainty and the chaotic nature of the weather. And it's how, I mean, some people just take the mean of all that and call it the forecast, but there's a lot of more advanced ensemble interpretation techniques that you can use that's
cool.
And there's also the add-on modules, you know, like the hurricane landfall winds. We're combined that with the stuff from the global models with a radial wind model and artificial intelligence, this and that, to, you know, get the meaningful outputs. So we use a lot of machine learning, a lot of artificial intelligence, and also a lot of process models in conjunction with these global ensemble weather forecasts. So
that's
part of what we do on the weather side. Then we also have a climate side of the company where people are, where we're looking at. I mostly like to go out maybe 30 years in the future.
Okay.
And this is and looking at regional decadal scenarios of what could happen.
Right.
Finished a project for a company that owns a bunch of wind farms, and they wanted to know, well, is global warming going to cause the winds to slow down or anything awful like that? And we gave them a bunch of different scenarios. And our response to them is that, well, natural weather and climate variability is going to swamp any signal from global warming on the time scale of 30 years. And we gave them scenarios about how we thought that might play out. I mean, so that's an example of the type of thing we do on the climate thing. Help educate corporations, you know, as they try to figure out what is their vulnerability to climate change from the actual climate and also from the policies that are being enacted, you know, which is a greater risk to them at this point. Sometimes it's the policies, and help educate them, help them deal with litigation matters, help with siting of equipment and plants and whatever. So it's working on some really interesting projects. It's applied in the sense that there's somebody on the other end who actually wants this and is telling us some parameters of what their issue is, but it requires a lot of research and ingenuity to provide them with something useful. So it's quite interesting from my perspective. You know, I still have the heart of a scientist. You know, I want to research, understand, and whatever, but I also like doing something useful. I like seeing how all of this can be used to help, you know, electric utilities make better decisions, insurance companies make better decisions about what they're doing, both operationally and planning in the future. And I also like the humanitarian side of what we do. And I think that's very interesting, very rewarding. It's not particularly lucrative, but, you know, I just feel good about figuring out a way. You know, I'm helping these smallhold farmers in Pakistan and India, coffee growers and whatever. And
that's important.
I mean, like that. Yeah.
I consider that extremely important. And we have an obligation to get the lowest cost kilowatt per hour to everybody on the planet. There's so many people that don't have low cost power. And, you know, if you're helping them with the weather and they can escape with their livestock, that's huge. So I'm over here, you know, rooting for you. That's absolutely wonderful. With your company, how do they get a hold of you for CFAN? And what is the best way? Who is your target market? I think there's two questions. How do they get a hold of you? And who do you want as customers?
Okay. Well, insurance companies, electric utilities, energy trading companies, those are our main clients.
Right.
Also, some municipal governments have been clients, state government have been clients.
Right.
Even the U.S. government has worked with a project for them. I tend to do the larger kind of challenging projects.
Nice.
You know, it's somebody hiring me to figure out what's going on in their backyard. You know, it's probably, you know, I tend to look at
bigger projects.
Yeah.
So you look at something like you just described, although how the weather is impacting the Gulf of Mexico, those kind of projects.
Well, sometimes they're very local, you know, I did a local project for someone who was siting a power plant on the Florida coast, actually, and, you know, wanted to know, well, what is my vulnerability from sea level rise and storm surge? And
that's pretty important.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So it was very local, but it was a high budget project. I mean, there was like a big piece of infrastructure that was at stake. So, you know, a range of different things. I also work with companies like startup companies who are trying to do something new and different and think that weather or climate information could feed into it. So I like to, I mean, I have a lot of conversations with those kind of companies and maybe one in five goes anywhere, but I like hearing what people are trying to do,
and
which is interesting in itself, and then trying to figure out if there's an angle that my company can help them and that we can, you know, both mutually profit from. So I like people, new ideas, interesting things.
But you know, if you think back, we would have never guessed that Tesla would be the, you know, electric car, and now we're seeing electric airplanes everywhere. So maybe, you know, there all these test electric vehicles are out there for the air. Maybe if you had CFAN and Tesla merge, you could have weather maps inside, you know, the car, so you wouldn't get people like me that would get stuck in a tornado.
That is an interesting idea. We don't do so much now casting. I mean, we do a little bit, but our claim to fame is we can predict something usefully at longer time horizons.
Oh,
okay. That like our main thing. I mean,
you might want a spinoff then. If we can get Elon on the phone, maybe you could work with him there.
Yeah. Well, right now I'm just really thrilled with what Elon's doing with Twitter.
Isn't that fun?
Opened it up. Oh, I was shadow banned on Twitter. I mean, I didn't know it until Elon. I mean, I was tweeting into the void. You know, no one would like, no one would retweet, no one would respond. I was tweeting into the void. I had maybe 30,000 followers, which is, you know, it's medium potatoes. It's not totally small potatoes. But now I'm at 50,000 followers since Elon has taken over, and I get lots of interaction, lots of traffic, and it's so much rewarding and interesting. And I've made new connections. People saying, "Oh, wow, you know, I just found you on Twitter." Well, I've been here since 2009. Okay. And the issue is I was shadow banned. Right. And why, you know, like apparently they're going after even people with really small followings that someone found objectionable. I would just love to see if one of these people investigating the Twitter files ever comes up with anything related to how the climate issue has been sort of sanitized and shadow banned on Twitter. I don't know if it's a big enough deal, but I would love to see somebody do that.
I got notified by the UN on my YouTube account because I had said some wrong things about climate change. So I got banned by the UN. I got that going for me. You know, if I can make the UN mad, I'm okay. So,
I don't know.
But yeah, I am so thrilled about Twitter. I am having fun with Twitter again. I mean, it's like it was not there. I don't have any followers at all. I like it when I get trolled, though. People think that I'm like, all right, a different opinion. So, I mean, as long as you look at it as fun, this getting serious over it.
And you're free to ignore whatever you want. I mean, I don't I don't block anybody. A few people I've muted just because they fill up my notification thread with endless junk. So I've just muted them. They can read what I write, but I don't want to hear from them.
Right.
You know, so that helped keep the experience a little bit saner. But I like it when somebody wants to engage me in a little bit of an adversarial way.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah.
I would rather have a little bit of adversarial and have good conversation. I would like to have, I want to hear all sides, but somebody that's a horse's butt bahonkus, I'm not interested. So, thank you very much, Dr. Curry, for stopping by our podcast today. Is there any last words? You got the last word right here.
Okay. Well, look for my book, Climate Uncertainty and Risk, published by Anthem Press, come out next summer. And I would I look forward to people's reactions to it.
I'll tell you what, after we get the book, I want to read it and go through it. I love going through the books and earmarking it and everything else. So if you don't mind coming back, I really want to do a deep dive on your book.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.